In this final episode of Season 6, we talk about designing for mobile, organisational challenges, and traffic versus conversion. Hello and welcome to BoagWorld.com, that podcast about web design stuff that we do every week. My name's Paul Boag, and joining me today is Marcus Lillington, as always. That's not your whole name, it's not Marcus Lillington, as always.
Marcus Lillington, as always, that's my full name.
Indeed. So, our last episode of Season 6. Are you sad? Are you sad to be going?
I am, in some ways I am, because you did say that we do the podcast every week, and I thought, well, we're not going to be doing it for the next few weeks. But no, I'll enjoy having the time off, mainly because, as probably, I'm not going to moan about the amount of work, because we seem to have done that on every show, about the last 10 shows, but it will give me a chance to catch up over the summer. Which will be nice. I can enjoy the lovely weather.
I think we need these breaks that we have between seasons, I think are crucial. And I think the reason they're crucial is because it makes people realise how much they miss us when we're not there.
It feeds the love.
It does feed the love. What is it that, something about the heart, you know, what's
absence
the,
makes the yes. heart grow stronger, fonder, something like that.
Yes. And that is, I am sure, the case.
You don't think people just forget about us?
I do. I think they probably do, absolutely. And I suspect it's very bad to stop. But we're going to anyway. Screw them all. That's what I say.
But you're going on holiday. You're going on holiday for a month.
I'm not going on holiday for a month. I'm going away for a month and working half days.
About,
don't start, Marcus. Don't
with,
start.
With your family, going from one beach to another. holiday for twice as much time as anyone else is allowed to in the company.
You know what I'm doing. I'm not allowed to announce what I'm doing because it's not official yet, but you know I will be working hard.
You're going to be working hard. Okay.
At least half the time.
Yeah.
I've made no commitments for the other half. I think it's a genius idea, working half days while travelling around in a motorhome. So I do an hour in the morning, 3 hours in the evening, and then the rest of the day I swan around and have fun.
Yeah, so I'll be trying to organise as many afternoon meetings as possible.
You can get stuffed. You know I can't do afternoon meetings because we've agreed what I will be doing over that period of time. So I will be saying no to meetings. So, yeah.
Working hard.
Working hard, yeah. Indeed. On my secret project.
People will be jealous. No, it's secret, so instant jealousy. And a secret project, that's what we all want.
Yeah, it's not as sexy as it sounds. It'd be really cool if I was creating some cool internet startup that was going to make me billions, but it really isn't that sexy. So never mind. So how's your week been, Marcus?
Still hot, which I like. I love the hot weather.
It's been good, isn't it?
It's great. Although it's cooled down a little bit today, but it's still bloody lovely. So long may it carry on.
Indeed.
So not only do we moan about our workload, we also talk about the weather. But it makes a change to talk about it being nice because it's been absolutely crap for the last 2 years.
I'm sure we must have had done this week. You've been with me. We've been gallivanting.
We did a bit of gallivanting on Monday, didn't we?
I did more gallivanting on Tuesday. We couldn't have had, we had the best meeting ever, guys, the best meeting ever with a client on Tuesday, wasn't it? And it was like, we were expecting, you know, to have a challenge and
Monday.
And Monday, was it? We were expecting it to be a bit of a challenge and, difficult at times, and they just got it and they were enthusiastic and it was great. That's what, why can't all clients be like that?
Yes, indeed.
They might even... No, I'm not willing to commit to that yet. I was going to say they might even knock Cindy off the top of my favourite client pile.
You can't say that.
No, I know.
Shocking.
But no...
I'm going to edit that out.
Okay.
I'm going to bleep it out.
You're going to bleep the name out.
No, just the whole sentence. It will just be, they might even bleep, 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 bleep. Like that.
That'd be great. Let's do that. Because people just wonder. It was really funny. we did this thing at a church where they were recording embarrassing moments that people have had, and I managed to get roped into to telling an embarrassing story. And it started off something like, you know, when I was a teenager, I really wanted to impress a girl, so I, right? And then he cut the video at that point and then just skipped to the end bit of me saying, and that was an absolute disaster, and didn't say what it was I did. So obviously people imagined far worse than what I really did. So editing is a very powerful tool.
Indeed, yes. Well, we can make it, we can make it seem good or bad, whatever it is.
Yes.
But Paul, on this subject, I'm not going to let you skip over it. you held the Muppet Award at Headscape pretty much every year from its beginning to its end. I mean, we don't do it anymore. We probably should resurrect it. The one about the basically the fire brigade coming out to find you because you drowned in a field or something.
Yeah.
The not turning up to a speaking engagement because you thought it was the following day.
Yeah.
Trying to remember some of the others.
Why is it necessary to drag all these up, and how does this in any way relate to what we were talking about?
Embarrassing things Paul's done.
Oh well, if we go down that line, that could you know, we could do a season just dedicated to that. I mean, let's scrap this idea of the great debate for season 7 and just do Paul's embarrassing moments. That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, we could bring back Headscape employees over the years to talk about their personal experiences.
Their favourite, most embarrassing thing they've seen me do. Absolutely. Actually, I'm quite excited, mine. I've just scheduled the first two posts for these great debate topics we're going to do in September. So they'll go out and then people can comment on them. And they're really good. The first one is about that this house proposes that all websites should be built responsively. And the second one is this house proposes that all those involved in creating a website should be able to at least write some HTML. Which I think is going to be two excellent debate points. I'm looking forward to hearing what we get back.
Okay, cool.
So you seem totally unimpressed and unexcited about that.
I know, I probably could argue both on both of those.
Which is good. That's exactly what you want from a good debate subject. Yes. So that's going to be really good. So those will be posted on the website soon. So you need to make sure you're either following me on Twitter at BoagWorld or you're subscribed to the feed so that you know when those exciting topics come out so you can join in the conversation, because it'd be really cool. And the idea is that when we kick off again in September, do we know what date we're kicking off? Can you remember?
I can't remember. All I know is that I'm away the week commencing. I think it's the 9th or the 10th.
Right.
So I would imagine it'd be the week after that.
Okay.
I'm guessing. Don't know.
You're
you
away
know these
the,
things.
No,
I don't know.
I think it comes back. When are you away?
I'm going to have to get a calendar up now.
It doesn't matter. This is really boring.
So professional, isn't it?
It doesn't matter.
Right, here we go.
I think
I'm doing it now.
I think we're coming back for them, rather than when we record it. I think we're going to be back for you, dear listener, on the 12th of September.
Okay. When are we actually recording this episode for the 12th, then?
Well, I thought that was going to be the week before, but apparently you're away.
Oh, we could do it the week before?
Yeah, so the week beginning the second.
The second, yeah, but I can't record one the week beginning the 9th. People really want to know this, don't they?
They don't want to know this at all. So this is the kind of problems you have when you do a weekly podcast. And obviously, there's so much pressure for us to be putting out quality material that we you know, because so many people deeply love this show and are so reliant on it, that we feel an enormous pressure, don't we, Marcus, to record
and keep going. We have such high standards.
We do. And that's
such
very hard.
High standards.
I mean, we have to, this half an hour episode, let's be honest. You know, that takes, best part of 3 days to record. You know, by the time we've edited out all the crap bits and just left the good stuff, you know, it's a major undertaking. I don't think people appreciate how long it takes, or indeed believe us.
No, I say yes. I've stopped listening, Paul. Sorry, are you still talking about the same thing?
I think that's probably a signal we need to move on, is it not?
Okay, first question is from Salan Brown. Do you think that's just meant to be Sally or something? I don't know.
No, I think it's right.
Okay,
cool.
Salan Brown.
Do we always have to comment on the names? It's like
pretty much.
Okay. All right, I just, you know, perhaps it's a thing we do now, like your joke at the end of the show.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that reminds me, I ought to find one.
He's so prepared. So prepared and professional. It just blows me away.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to read the question and deflect your mocking tone. When it comes to designing for mobile sites, what device or resolution should you use for the first initial template design?
A very good question. And I always say that as well. I
suppose very good question. That's
well, I wouldn't include it
on
the show. Yeah, it's like if it was shit, I wouldn't be including it. So you should go without saying that it's a
really
very good
question.
Yeah, this is a terrible question. Well, it kind of. I mean, I guess to some extent you could argue it is a terrible question, but I don't know. You know, it just depends on your perspective, doesn't it? I think it's a good question. No, the reason I included this one actually is because on Tuesday, so the day after we had that such successful meeting, we were doing a kickoff meeting with a publisher in Basingstoke.
I wasn't,
No, you weren't, but I was with Chris and Dan and Lee. And we kind of got to the wireframing segment where we were doing a bit of wireframing with them. And Dan said, oh, you really should start mobile first with your wireframing. So we think about the mobile from the start. And I was like, yes, I totally agree. Absolutely. And then when I came to do it, I found it really difficult to kind of start with mobile first. I felt the need to keep kind of falling back into a desktop way of doing things. And I know, you know, but actually he's entirely right. Dan is right. And it was for the first time that I kind of thought, oh dear, I'm getting old and stuck in my ways. I have to think desktop first. But I got over it. It was fine. It was all good. And I actually think it's really worthwhile when you're designing a site for, you know, for mobile that you do start mobile first. But that's almost a kind of given in this question. You know, yes. when it comes to designing a mobile site, what device or resolution should you do your first initial templates on? So he's kind of going a step further than that, isn't he? And saying, well, okay, yeah, fair enough. We've got to do mobile first. I get that. Do you think I ought to come back in a minute and say why do mobile first? Perhaps we ought to answer that question first, even though it's not in the question being asked. I think, you know, there might be people listening that's going, well, why should it be mobile first? And I think this is such a good idea because mobile first helps focus you. It helps you focus you on absolutely key content. You know, what is it you really need to include? Because you cut back, don't you, when you start thinking mobile, you know, you're forced to think about what really matters and you're forced to prioritise what really matters.
I'm not a major fan, if I'm honest. Well, no, that's not true. I don't think it's black and white. I don't think it's, yes, mobile first is the right approach. I think content
it is a matter
first
of opinion.
Is the right approach.
Yes.
And one of the reasons, and this is more of an excuse, really, than a reason not to go down mobile first, but as long as you've done content first and you've prioritised your content, then I guess to a certain extent, some people would argue, well, that is mobile first. If you know what the content is and you prioritised it, then maybe you could argue that is mobile first. But let's say we're saying it's content first. I think if you then present that as effectively, it's going to be a single column layout, maybe some kind of tweaks to the layout that wouldn't be just a linear thing, but pretty much you're looking at a linear layout.
Yeah.
That's not the best way to present it to your client, and the best way to present it to a client is desktop first, as long as you've done the content first exercise, because they'll get it.
But yeah, you know. I think there's probably more design challenges in desktop, which is perhaps why you can't not address desktop with the client. And I think that was what I was partly struggling with in that meeting, is that, you know, you've got limited time. You know, we'd gone through the content first exercises we always do.
Yeah.
You know, what content do we want on this page? You know, what's the priority of this content? You know, what do we want users to look at first? And we do things like user attention point exercises, link in the show notes to something on that. Yeah, I would agree. I think it is content first. I think it sometimes helps to think in terms of mobile first because it forces you to make tougher decisions. you know, I think if you just think in terms of content first and desktop and that kind of thing, then, you know, it's more, you know, content first is more abstract, isn't it? So you're more likely to just include stuff that maybe you don't 100% need to include, and you're more likely to fudge the priority issues. While when you're thinking about mobile, there's a very specific application for it, and maybe that encourages you to focus and go, well, we need to put one thing above another because we can only have one common column.
Yeah.
So, you know, what are we going to put above one another? You know, and it kind of forces the issue maybe a bit. But yeah, I totally agree.
That's true, actually. Good reason to do it. But we still haven't answered the question.
We still haven't answered the question, as is our want. So he's talking about what device or resolution should you start with when you're designing mobile first? And that's a really good question. I would take the kind of content first mentality, and so work from the lowest common denominator up. So depending on what platforms you're supporting, this will be dependent on where you should start. But let's say, for example, let's just pick, you know, pick more common examples. I was going to pick something a bit obscure, but let's pick something common, like I'm going to design for the iPhone 4 mm-hmm. and the iPhone 5 and the iPad. I would encourage you to start with the iPhone 4 because that's got the most constraints, because mm-hmm. it's a smaller screen, and so therefore that has an effect on, you know, makes the design harder. It, you know, if you want to take that even to the extreme, if you say want it to work on a dumb phone, or a feature phone, as they call them, then I would start with that because that's going to be even more constrained still. Or if you're going with a BlackBerry, that's going to be more constrained maybe than an iPhone, and so therefore start with that. So always start with the lowest common denominator, because it forces you to make the tough decisions out of the gate, which is the important thing. Do you reckon that makes sense?
Absolutely.
Good.
And to a certain extent, I was wondering whether you really need to kind of nail down a particular size. I don't know.
Well, no, I don't. Well, yes and no. I think it depends on how you're going about designing it. Mm. You know, if I presume this is a he, I'm not quite sure. He or a she, Salon. Don't know. But if this person is wanting to present comps to a client, in other words, if they haven't designed in a browser. I mean, this comes back to the old issues of the shortcomings with most of the design tools that we've got these days, that the first thing it does when you open it up is it says set a browser size.
Yeah.
You know, or set a canvas size, should I say. So if you're working with tools like that, then yes, you do have to set a device or resolution to start with. If, of course, you're designing in the browser, then maybe it's a bit more flexible and you can play around a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Very interesting conversation. But that's where these new generation of tools get quite interesting. Things like Adobe Reflow, link in the show notes to that, because you can put in breakpoints and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think before you're kind of presenting stuff to the client, you need to be able to show them multiple states, which is my personal opinion.
I agree.
But there you go. Okay, so I think that about covers that question, doesn't it, really?
Yep.
Should we move on then?
Let's.
So this next question I'm really excited about and think is a really good question. In fact,
a really, really, really good question.
Yeah. It's so suspicious that it actually feels like a question I would write. It feels like one I've just made up.
Oh, right. So it's so good it could be from you.
Yes, absolutely. So do you want to read it?
The ego is bubbling up near the high end today, I see.
Why? What's that mean? No, I wasn't saying that the questions that I write are all good questions. I meant it's the kind of subject I love talking about. Don't be facetious or whatever. You're an arse sometimes. You really are.
But that's what it sounded like. Anyway, right. So this is from Jeremy Bush, a very normal sounding name if you're from England.
You couldn't help it, could you? You couldn't help but comment on the name.
Beautiful British name. All right, here we go. It strikes me that many of the issues that dictate whether a site is successful has nothing to do with design or build, but rather organisational issues. Would you agree? And what are the biggest problems?
Great question. It is. It's a superb question. 10 out of 10. I think possibly the reason Jeremy's asking this is because this is what I've been writing so much about recently, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yes, Jeremy, I would 100% agree with you. I think a lot of the success is interesting. I was having a chat with Andy Budd, link in the show notes, earlier today, and we were talking about exactly these kinds of issues that, you know, how when it comes to designing a website, you can create the best website in the world for a client, you know, that you do all the right things, you build it responsive, it does all the stuff that it should do, but it's not going to necessarily succeed. It won't succeed if the organization doesn't have everything in place to be able to support and maintain that website. And he compared it to office buildings, right, which is probably because at the moment his company, Clear Left, link in the show notes, are getting new office buildings and getting, you know, buying a building, renovating it, and all of the rest of it. So I suspect it's very much in his head at the moment. And he was saying that, you know, it's like you spend a big chunk of money in doing up a building, but if you don't, you know, spend time and effort on ongoing maintenance, you know, and you don't regularly repaint it and all the rest of it, slowly it will fall into disrepair. And he's saying that, and I totally agree, that websites are very much like that. If the organization isn't equipped to maintain that website, then it will fail. And I absolutely agree with that, you know. And he went on to make another interesting point. He says he finds it ironic that most large organizations have more staff employed to clean the toilets and keep the office tidy than they do people dedicated to working on their website. Which I never thought of it like that, but actually is really true, isn't it? That is just such a depressing thought. So I guess the second part of the question is, what's the biggest problem here? And that's quite hard because there's so many, isn't there?
I suppose it depends on where, which level you're, you know, which level of business. But I think for SMEs, small to medium companies, I mean, what's being implied in the question is that sites are deemed successful for reasons nothing to do with the quality the quality of the build, or whether they're delivering on useful things like more contacts coming through or something like that. And I think that probably sites are often deemed successful if senior managers or CEOs or managing directors like them. So yes, I like it. I think it suits me. It fits with me. So therefore, I view it as a success. And I suspect that lots of designers out there are bullied by these people to design something by these people when they really should be designing something to help further that business rather than fit with the managing director's idea of what a good website is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that reminded me of something else that Andy said, which is a lovely phrase that I hadn't come across before, which is the swoop and poop of senior management. Have you ever heard about this?
Yes, yes. Sweeping. Never heard it called that before, but I know exactly what you mean.
You know, it's some senior manager that, you know, all these decisions are made by whoever's, you know, actually responsible for the website, and then senior management swoop in at the last minute and poop all over the project by, you know, saying, oh, it's not what I want, you know. And didn't you give an example of where this happened before, Marcus? I'm sure you were talking about where somebody didn't like the colour or something, or am I imagining that?
Oh, hang on, give me a... It hasn't happened recently, or has it?
It's the kind of thing that does happen, mine, isn't it?
Of course it,
it
is, because like people in management, even people who are kind of clever and have valuable ideas, feel that they have to say something.
Yeah.
But anyway, we've been through this. I mean, there are ways of avoiding this. You have to make sure that they're involved earlier on and that they understand the process and that they're not allowed to do swooping and pooping.
But it's not. I wouldn't actually call that the biggest problem here. No, I think the biggest problem
is... problem.
Yeah, I think there are probably much more fundamental issues that are much harder to solve. And I think a lot of the big ones are around organisational structure. So, you know, where you've got business units that are competing with one another, or there's some, you know, or just the departmental organisation means the website's been carved up across the company, you know, with marketing responsible for kind of branding, and design, and then, you know, IT responsible for the infrastructure under it, and then content maintenance spread across all the different departments, and that never works very well. And then you have situations where actually you've got different business units, you know, competing over priority on the website. And that's something that we came across with this publisher yesterday when we were working with them, is essentially they are two businesses in one. And there are two heads of marketing for these two separate companies who are appealing to different audiences and have different priorities and different product offerings, all trying to communicate with, you know, via a single website. And there's problems with that. And another one I remember very vividly was years back where we worked for a company that sold project management software to enterprise, and particularly the construction industry. And they had a really peculiar setup where their marketing team had targets for the number of leads generated, you know, so the number of potential leads that that can convert. And then the sales department had their own separate target to meet of how many of those leads that come in they then convert. So one was interested in driving traffic, one was interested in conversion, which is interesting. We're going to come on to that in a minute with the final question. And but you had this bizarre situation where the marketing department said, right, before anybody can see a demonstration of our software, they first have to register. And that forces people to hand over their information, which means they're now a lead. And we can pass those across to sales, and we've met our target. The problem is a lot of the people that wanted to view a demonstration were miles away from actually being ready to make a purchase. And so the sales department was then suddenly inundated with, you know, tons and tons of leads, and their conversion and leads that weren't at all useful. And so their conversion rate drove through the floor, and that caused conflict and problems and all the rest of it. So often I think they're kind of fundamental organizational issues that the web kind of highlights, essentially, that makes things quite challenging. And that's why we're spending as much time these days, you know, working with organizations to improve their internal structures and processes and policies as we are actually building websites. It's fascinating.
Yes, indeed.
I think the problem is that the web has become so business critical now that it's not enough for it just to kind of be tagged on or squeezed into the existing structures, and that actually it's got to be a fundamental part of the organization's DNA in terms of how they work and how they operate. I mean, the government digital service calls it digital by default, that it, you know, digital has to be at the heart of everything that's going on. And I don't think there's many organizations that have got their head around that yet, unfortunately.
Yes, if anything, If there's any kind of campaign or any kind of exercise that needs to be carried out, digital by default basically means, can we do this using digital first? Rather than maybe an assumption that you always create a leaflet for an annual leaflet for a particular, I don't know, department or something like that.
Yeah.
Or leaflets for maybe as giveaways in visitor centres or something like that. Can that be delivered as digital? You might decide that no, it can't. But digital by
default.
You should consider it first. Yeah.
I mean, there is one other area actually, which is a big organisational issue that I think damages websites, which is that the internal web team, if there is one, is often just treated as a service department to service the rest of the business, and actually has no power or authority in its own right. And that creates massive problems as well, because essentially they're just pulled in from one direction to the other. And so never really get into a position where they can think strategically or take the website forward. Because even if they had time to do that, they don't have the power to implement it anyway. So that's another massive issue that we spend a lot of time dealing with. So it's all interesting stuff. Web designers is a very different beast than what it was even 5 years ago, you know, in terms of the complexity and the challenges behind it. And I think Jeremy's question is a very astute one, or his observation, should I say, that actually designing or building a website is almost the easier part of the equation now than actually managing it and running it and the organizational challenges that go with that. So, yeah, Interesting stuff. Should we go on to our last question? Because it kind of builds on that one, actually. So it should be a good one.
Okay.
So this final question, again, is one that's very in the front of our minds. It kind of goes back to the meeting we had on Monday again, Marcus. Mm. Do you want to read it out?
Okay, this is from Ryan Buswell. We used to work with somebody called Buswell.
Oh, yeah, Jane. We did, didn't we, Jane?
Jane Buswell. Oh. Hello, Jane, if you might just happen to be listening. What are the chances of that?
Pretty slim. Although I'm still vaguely in contact with her because I know she reads some of the blog posts and stuff we put out because she does marketing, so she's vaguely related.
Okay, anyway, here's the question. It's not Jane Buswell, it's Ryan Buswell. Where should I focus on improving the amount of traffic to my site or how many Where should I focus on improving the amount of traffic to my site or how many visitors go on to convert?
So it's a kind of conversion versus traffic debate.
Yes.
Which was exactly the conversation we were having on Monday, which is fascinating. But I don't think it's always the same answer. Yeah, it is. It's one of those, isn't it?
Both. Really?
So what does it depend on, Marcus? What advice can we give Ryan?
Basically, there's no point in driving traffic to something that isn't converting very well.
Yes.
So get your conversion stuff done first, and if you're happy with how that's working, that you think it's as effective as it can be, then you can go mad on driving traffic.
Yeah, you that know? Pretty much sums it up, doesn't it, really? Yeah. Yes, actually, you summed that up a bit too well. There really is very little else you could add to it. Yeah, I mean, in terms of what is a good conversion rate, again, that kind of depends on what you're doing. If it's an e-commerce site, you know, if it's less than 2%, you definitely have got work to do. If it's over 10%, you can sit back very smugly. If it's between 3 and 6%, you know, that's about average, but there's probably ways you can improve it. But, you know, if you're a charity or if, you know, your call to action is something different than selling, then that's a bit more hard to judge. I think you need to look carefully. I think the tendency is to fall back on just driving traffic, but, you know, that can be an expensive business. I mean, again, it depends. I mean, you know, you could put up with a fairly poor conversion rate if the cost of driving traffic to your website is low, right?
Yeah.
You know, if it's expensive for you to improve the conversion rate, right, if you need to do something fundamental like reorganize your business or you know, implement an entirely new technology, then you might be better off just driving more traffic to the site. It's about a return on investment thing, isn't it, really? So it's not as black and white as perhaps you implied, Marcus.
Perhaps.
Well, because I mean, the assumption is that driving traffic is more expensive than improving conversion, and that's not always true, is it?
No, not... I see what you mean, yeah. Yeah, in some cases... Yeah, I mean, conversion may be really, really, really hard. You may not be able to improve it. It may be just simply a numbers game. Throw as many as you possibly can at it, and then you'll get the one in a million. So if you get one in a million, you need to throw 10 million at it or whatever. Yes, that does make sense. You're right. It's not just black and white.
And it also depends on the value of the conversion as well.
Mm.
You know, so I would say that probably... conversion rate can be improved more when it's a lower value of purchase, right? Or it's a lower, you know, so if it's something like, you know, download a document or sign up to a free newsletter, then it conversion rate, you know, getting someone to convert is relatively easy, which means small improvements to the UX may increase that dramatically. However, if your conversion is purchase a, you know, £30,000 car or a diamond ring or something, then maybe it's about just driving more and more people to the site in order to see the, you know, to be exposed to the product, and you get that one in a million.
Mm.
And you can also, you know, if there's a high enough profit margin on that diamond ring, then you could afford to spend a lot of money driving traffic just for the one in million conversion.
Yeah.
So it's
you've just got to make sure that you've got a million coming to the site. I guess that's the, it's a different way of looking at it. So I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, the answer is actually not just it depends, but it's very complicated. I think, you know, you need to know your profit margin on each transaction. Yep. You need to know the number of people that are currently converting.
Average value, if it's the value.
Yes, the average value, the level of conversion. And then you need to start doing some maths, basically, and go, well, you know, for me to increase that conversion rate by, say, 1%, you know, is going to cost me X amount and will generate this much additional income. But if I took that X amount and spent it on marketing instead, how many extra users would that bring in? And would that convert enough to bring in a better return on investment? You know, it's the kind of thing you have to get a calculator out on Google Analytics. Trust me, I spent a long time doing this on Monday night. It's the kind of area where you want someone that's got a good understanding of analytics to help you out. This is where Chris comes in, isn't it?
Yep.
You know, because he does really cool stuff with this. But it's very interesting. Again, this is a growing area. You know, a lot of organizations have data researchers, people that's job is just dedicated to managing and analyzing data. Mm. You know, I know that again, government digital services do this. I know Twitter have got people like this. You know, it's... And you might think, oh, that's quite a specialist piece of work. And you might... Not want someone internally doing that, but there are experts outside that you can hire to do that kind of analysis, and it is really worth it, you know, because it can make an enormous difference. I mean, on the client we were working with on Monday, you know, the figures that were coming out were millions of pounds worth of improvement, you know. Mm. So it's worth spending a bit of money to analyse the data and do those calculations. Exactly. And you can do it yourself.
It's fair to say that e-commerce sites have been doing this for years, but I think it's other sites are basically starting to measure their spend against ROI, really.
Absolutely.
And what's the best way of spending their budgets.
Yeah. So that's that one done, I think. I think we've covered... Those were three really good questions for our last episode. But I think it is time to move on to bigger and better things in our next season. I think we might come back to questions, mine, because I enjoyed that. I'm quite happy to repeat a season.
Absolutely. We must do apps again one day as well. I think people like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Or we might do a combined season with one app, one question, and something else. I don't know. It'd be interesting to hear people's feedback on that, actually, what they think we ought to do topic-wise. So send me an email at paul@boagworld.com or Boagworld, or however I'm pronouncing it this week.
There's something I've been meaning to say is count how many episodes we're at. Because ever since we went to series, obviously I don't know what number podcast this is. Because this might be the 300th episode.
Who cares, mine, really?
Oh, well, I'm just thinking we could do, you know, last time we had the 200th show, we did a 12-hour show, didn't we? Or was it 24-hour? I can't remember anyway.
12-hour.
This time we could do a show on a desert island or something like that.
Now, that I like the sound of. A show from the Maldives. How about that?
Or whilst on a cruise liner around the West Indies.
So if you fancy supporting that episode, please make your PayPal donations to paul@boagworld.com. Thank you very much.
There you go. Done.
So, Marcus, you got a joke for us.
Another joke from Donovan Bailey. I think it's Bailey. Science joke.
Okay. Ooh, my son will like this.
So here we go. Two atoms are walking down the street, and one says to the other, wait, we have to go back. I've lost an electron somewhere. And the second atom says, really? Are you sure? And the first atom replies, yes, I'm positive.
Oh, that's very cool. Although, that I like, yeah, good. Well done.
Not my favourite joke, but no one sends me jokes. That's an old one. I've had that one for ages.
Perhaps we need to replace the jokes next season as well, and not have jokes, but have recipes. Or favourite album.
Idea. Yes.
Or your favourite album. Oh, you can do favourite recipes. Okay, that would be a change.
Favourite album would be easier. Or would it? Ooh. I don't know.
One or the other.
No, just what about doing a recommended song, and then we could put a Spotify link in or something like that. You could create a Spotify playlist.
Okay.
That's a great idea. Let's do that. And then each week you add another song to the playlist.
Right. You know what? We'll start next season. We'll go, what was that idea you had?
Write it down, Marcus.
Yes, writing it down now.
Good. You're lying. That's, your level of commitment is horrendous. All right. So that about wraps up this season. As we said, we'll be back at some point indeterminate in September.
Yes, sometime.
We should. It'll be the 12th. 12th of September, you will get the podcast back. We're actually going to be stopping blogging as well over that period of time. So the site is going to be quiet. And you can get on with some work for a change, you bunch of slackers. You know, they sit around listening to podcasts. They should be doing something useful with their lives. Go out and create something amazing. And then cut me in for a percentage of the money you make out of it. I'm being very money-grabbing this episode. It's not good. Perhaps it's time for me to stop them. Thank you very much for listening, guys. And we'll be back again next season with The Great Debate. Goodbye.
Bye.
The podcast for those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. Bye.